Hello, it's Peter Ayers. Can you believe we're at the end of season 6 of the Stages podcast? That can mean only one thing. We've arrived at our Christmas episode. It's been a huge year for the podcast. We delivered 102 episodes. Everyone, a super conversation with artists and creatives and support staff across many disciplines. Some of our regulars are back to spread the Christmas cheer. We catch up with Trevor Ashley, Rhonda Birchmore, Mark Humphreys and Geraldine Turner. And of course, the episode wouldn't be complete without my co-host, the wonderful Kate Fitzpatrick. A perfect episode to finish the year, to say thank you for listening and a very Merry Christmas. We'll be back in March 2024. But now, let's bring on the festive cheer. Hello, I'm Peter Ayers, and you're listening to Stages, the podcast that converses...
The reality of that 8-show-a-week slog is really hard.
When I start on a character, I have to draw them, and I'm not an artist.
This is an effect built in myth and mystery.
So you'd be sitting in this tiny little bio box with radiators all around you.
Which was a funny thing, because I don't think that play would have happened in that way if it wasn't at Griffin.
You're a bit different to the other girls in this area.
Yes, I thought, yes, I am.
That was the days when they could smell an actor or a singer and think, oh, I've got 6 weeks.
My sisters really taught me that I had to be versatile.
This ostrich, pink ostrich feather sticking up out of my hair, out of this wig.
My first career, as it were, was preparation for my second career.
And her face was beaming. It was just beaming at me.
I hadn't lost any of my passion or love for it, so it's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Love the fact that you knew so much.
Well, I think you have to be informed, don't you?
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, when one thinks about my experience as a cricket commentator and how to behave as one, that's kind of a fabulous lesson, really, in being prepared.
Here we are again.
Here we are again. Another year.
Can you believe it's gone so quickly?
No, I can't. I mean, it's... I literally look around... I must say, the surroundings have changed and everything looks beautiful. But that's it. It's almost like we've been sitting here and things have happened around us. You know what I mean? You and I have gone on talking since we were together last year. And like maybe our surroundings have changed and maybe some of our circumstances have changed. But... basically, we haven't, have we?
I don't think we have.
No, I think I've
not. Not at all, not at all. But here we are, end of season 6 of the Stages podcast.
Oh, my goodness. Is that right?
Yeah. And thank you for once again joining us for the Christmas episode.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm
which is
thrilled.
Always a very popular episode, I would say.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank God for that.
Absolutely.
So, as it should be.
You know, you were there in season 2. Season 2.
That's right. Yeah. And then who did you have in season... Or shouldn't I ask that?
In season 1?
Yeah. Did you just do it by yourself?
Oh, the no. We didn't have a Christmas episode. No.
Oh, that's good.
We just finished. I think it was just 24 episodes in that first episode. But look, I tell you, this year alone, 2023, I have recorded 102 episodes.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Haven't you listened to them?
Not all of them. I haven't. I mean, I always love them and I always think, but I didn't count them. My God, you're kidding.
I set myself a little bit of a goal, I think, to see if I could do 2 a year, which I have, but it's a lot of work, you know, because each episode is takes a while to research and write the questions and post-production and
My God, I don't know. How did you do that?
Well, you know, I tell people it's my golf. Yeah.
Well, it requires practice, doesn't it?
It requires practice,
and it requires dedication, and it requires discipline.
It's a labour of love.
Yes, it is, because you love the game. And who was your favourite?
Well, I love
interviewee.
You know, it's an opportunity to catch up with some extraordinary artists, some on the who have made their mark on the global stage, and some locally, of course, just domestically. So,
I must say that's what I love about your. It's so incredibly wide, like. Almost anyone that has contributed anything that has been good or interesting, or no matter what their kind of category, however they fit into the behind the scenes, in front of them or around them, or I mean, you've interviewed them. I think that's fantastic.
Well, theatre is a collaborative effort,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it takes everybody to make the magic that we see 8 times a week in a theatre.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when you think about say, costumes and, you know, whatever. You think about that part, think about the set, you think about the mechanics of it, the lighting, everything. Mm. Extraordinary.
Mm. But look, I don't like to pick out any particular folk because I absolutely genuinely love every person that I talk to. Everybody has the most fascinating story. But, you know, personal highlights of me were having access to the great mind of Sir Tim Rice.
Oh.
Courtesy of you, dear Kate.
Well, he's a very old friend of mine. We met during Jesus Christ Superstar. We met on the opening night, actually, at the, you know, Harry had painted the Capitol chocolate. And I thought, oh, my... I remember looking at it thinking, God, what is it going to take to get all that chocolate painted off? I mean, that's what... Literally everything was chocolate. I mean, it was...
Mission Brown.
It was Mission Brown, was it? Yes, I suppose. I thought that's even worse. And I remember meeting him, this tall, blonde, like a really sweet-faced kind of teddy bear sort of person. And he was wearing a red jumper, like Rupert Bear. And a white shirt with little tiny roses on it, you know. And I remember looking up, he's very tall, as you may know. And we kind of had this little chat. And the interesting thing was that I didn't get there until the interval because I was in a play at the old Nimrod, you know, at the Griffin, at the stables. And so I thought, I can be there, I said, you know, after the show and go to the party. And when I arrived, it was interval. And I thought, oh my God, you know, interval, what? And because someone had cut the cable between the conductor and the string section of the orchestra. And so they'd had to stop the show and it started like an hour late or something like that. And then, like, disastrous opening night, absolutely disastrous. And he was this funny man, like joking and being so casual and sweet, you know. And anyway, I watched the second half and even the beginning of the second half, something had gone wrong with the smoke machine. And so that it covered literally, if you were sitting in the stalls, you're above your head, just about an inch above your head was about 3 inches of smoke, like a fog. You could see nothing, absolutely nothing except the fog. And so the party was meant to be at the Revolting Restaurant, you know, in Australia Square.
Revolting.
We used to call it. It was revolving. And for, anyway, Harry had organised it and everything. And of course, we were going there an hour and a half later than it was supposed to be. Hour and a half to 2 hours later than it was supposed to be. So there was this dismal-looking, very tired-looking people who were sort of serving drinks. And, like, all the food looked a bit tired and everyone was a bit tired and it was spinning round and everyone was saying, oh, my God, it's been a disaster. It was the most extraordinary night I've ever spent, and that's the night we met. And we bonded over cricket.
Of course. It was a lifelong friendship.
Like, because he has his own cricket team, the Heartaches, as you know. And he's a cricket fanatic. He absolutely loves, and he's been the head of the MCC in the time that I've known him. And we've always, I mean, literally at that time, you know, I wasn't necessarily a lover of musicals, but I really liked Jesus Christ Superstar. I really liked him, but I really liked cricket. And so we became good friends. Yeah. So the next time I was in London about, I don't know, a year later or something, I went and stayed with his family. He had this unbelievable house out of Oxford, literally on the perimeter of it. Actually quite a famous house, you know, old house. Most wonderful. I thought, oh my God, there must be money.
In writing musicals.
Goodness me. And but he and his family, Jane and the children, were lovely. I remember they had hamsters with names, the kids. I mean, I'd never seen a hamster before. Australian kids didn't keep hamsters, did they?
We had guinea pigs.
Well, we did. Yes, we had guinea pigs. Yeah, they weren't guinea pigs. They were kind of bigger.
Yeah.
Looked like big rats sort of thing.
Yeah.
Goldy-coloured rats.
Yeah.
But
So it's Sir Tim Rice, and I finished the year. One of my final interviews was with great playwright Joanna Murray Smith.
Oh wow!
And I'd started the year interviewing David Williamson.
Oh wow!
So I was quite chuffed because they're both Australian playwright heroes of mine.
Absolutely.
So to have access to their minds too was great. But you've done some Williamsons, haven't you?
I have. I've never done any of Joanna's work, which I really admire her. I love her stuff. But I've done a bit of David's film and stage. Yeah. And I've even been directed by him. He directed
Cruise Control.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. At the Ensemble.
Yeah.
Sir Richard Bonning was a highlight.
Wow.
I mean, to have access to
wow,
the great Svengali of Dame Joan Sullivan.
Yeah. And especially in this year of the 50th anniversary of the Opera House.
Yes, which of course, you were there on day one, weren't you?
I was. The Srubany Opera. Jim Sharman wanted me to play Polly. And he's always thought I'm a bit feeble-minded, I think. And he said, oh, she wears 6 different costumes and she wears silver fox and she sings 7 songs and she's the lead and everything. I said, I want to play Jenny. I want to wear the black dress, sing the great song, dance the tango and, you know, be a whore. And he said, no, we fought. In fact, he was living in London. He was directing upstairs at the Royal Court. He was directing the Rocky Horror Show. And I was staying with him. We were sleeping in the same bed. And we used to fight. We used to fight every night on our way to sleep. You know what I mean? We'd sort of argue about me playing Polly or Jenny until we actually were asleep. And that went on for weeks and weeks. But
you got your way?
I did. But he to punish me, I think he made me dye my very beautiful hair black cherry, which is the last and darkest red on the spectrum of colour. And of course when it started growing out it was white and I just looked, so then they pennered it and I went, looked a bit Rita Hayworth for a while, and then that was growing out white, and so they streaked it and I looked like a marmalade cat, and that's when we did the Rocky Horror Show. And then in 1 week I had to be a blonde to play Jackie Weaver's sister in The Removalist, David Williamson's the film of his play. And so they just tipped on the bleach and went away and covered their eyes, and they had to put milk on it to stop it falling out of my head. And that night I went on stage, Rocky, and my hair was white and my roots were black, that's even though I'm a blonde, and it was standing like this, like dreadlocks, like the hair poster, you know.
But not a bad look for magenta.
Perfect for magenta.
I mean, if you were playing Hedda Gabler, it might have been different.
Would have been. But I went in the next day and they put some toner in and boom, I did the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Horse hair.
Yeah. So speaking of music theatre, I mean, some great performers we've created on the Australian musical theatre stage who have also made their mark globally. But, you know, the opportunity to talk to Todd McKenney over a three-part
series. Isn't he brilliant? Yeah. He's a brilliant guy, I think.
Natalie Moscow, who's...
Unbelievable.
...now in New York.
Oh, wow. I knew her many years ago here. You know,
had you worked with her?
Yeah, indirectly, yeah.
And John Dietrich.
John Dietrich, I absolutely love. I think one of the great losses to the Australian theatre and the musical theatre was him deciding to retire, you know, to give it up. I think he was brilliant, and I think he was so committed and so dedicated and so focused on it. And I think that the production, I did Zorba with him, with the cast of Chicago, I think he just became very disillusioned after Titanic. I mean, what a name for a musical. You know what I mean? You just think it's irony in its most extraordinary form, I think. And instead of... Anyway.
A great story. And it's a great story. And he's an accomplished director, and that production was sensational.
He's a sensational director. Yeah. And he was a wonderful Joe DiMaggio to me. You know, when I played Marilyn Monroe in Insignificance, that's how we met.
Yeah.
I met him as an actor.
Yeah. The great Sheila Bradley I got to talk to as well.
Oh, wow.
You know, was one of our elders of the musical theatre, John Waters.
John Waters is a wonderful person too.
Absolutely. And Karen Johnson Mortimer, who now has established herself as, you know, a key director of musical theatre in Australia. And in recent weeks, Anthony Warlow.
Well, he's one of my heroes.
What a treat.
Yeah. Never met him.
Yeah.
Wow.
But so all of those guests can, of course, be accessed in the stage's archive. And dear listener, hopefully you will do that. There'll be plenty of listening over summer anyway.
And so will I.
So will you.
Yes.
Kate, I had an idea that your wonderful incomplete memoir, because perhaps there's another one, name dropping, I just pulled off the shelf. And what if we turn to a page and you could just read from it, and maybe that might trigger some other memory.
Okay.
All right, so why don't we say there are...
Do you want to know the name of my part two? I wanted to call it More Centrelink Than Central Casting The Last 30 Years. Do you like that?
Well, that's the reality, unfortunately, isn't it?
Sadly, the reality of
actors, if you're in for the long game.
Mm.
Yeah.
I know, but, you know, it clearly didn't have a happy ending. So, no, they loved the title, but were not interested in the idea. So one hopes there is a happier ending that we can provide to this.
Select for me a number between 1 and 390.
Let's say 137, my favourite number.
A 137?
A prime number. I love prime numbers.
Right. Why are you drawn to that?
I've always loved prime numbers. I used to live at 137 Sturt Road.
Right. So let's go from the second paragraph there. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately for Corinne, every midday we were in top tote doing Margaret's movement class. The first couple of times she hit the deck clutching her stomach and howling, the shock class instantly turned into an emergency ward. But as is the way of the world, as soon as we realised her condition, however alarming, wasn't as life-threatening as it appeared, we rapidly lost interest in any vestige of human kindness. This was influenced to a great extent by our teacher's reaction to these monthly interruptions. Moments before the blood-curdling scream was due, Margaret would glance at her clock, turn Carl off.
I love the pun.
Do you like that?
Yeah.
And wait until Corinne was in the fetal position before turning the music up loud enough to drown any sounds of pain. Before long, we'd actually step over the pain-racked body without looking down or inquiring into the state of its health. I can't believe I wrote this. I clearly remember doing this at least once before, after combing my hair in Nida's ladies' room. I found the girls' toilet too appalling to use for anything other than hair. Privately, I referred to it as the bowl room. This rather fey gentility was a hangover from my Adelaide convent school days, where the loos had been called bowl rooms since Nonna, my grandmother, and much later Mum had been pupils. My sister Sally and I were the third generations of our family to attend St. Aloysius College since the 19th century and were familiar with the term. Clearly the words toilet and ladies were far too vulgar for anyone else to contemplate.
Now that's obviously about your time at NIDA.
Yes.
And Margaret Barr, who was...
Margaret Barr, the great Margaret Barr.
Movement
teacher. Yes, and we did the Cartuli Carmina and the Camino Burana. That's weird. We did that every day. They were excellent. And she'd say to me, she said, Kate, it's all the lyricism in the world, not a dynamic bone in your body, she would say to me. And then she'd say to Gary MacDonald, Gary. Because he was very tall and very thin and kind of spidery, you know. I mean, wonderful kind of movement, but she was such a little dynamo, such, you know, this wonderful woman who danced with all over the world with great companies and everything. And somehow, and she used to wear this little tunic, it was called tie-dyed. My favourite one was purple and green and blue. And she'd have a matching bandana around her head, the hair in a bun. And she drove a kind of pickup, like a, you know, an open back pickup sort of truck. And she had sandals, bare feet, and she wore black tights, you know, footless tights. And had lovely skin, beautiful kind of olivey skin. No makeup, hair dragged back into the bun and the turban-y thing wrapped around it. And she was absolutely terrifying. And, of course, I'd done ballet, so I always turned out, you know, instead of having my feet straight. And I always clamped my knees instead of bending them. You know, I was absolutely the antithesis of anything that she thought was good about dance or good about movement. Or I was, like, in the A to Z of movement, I was the Z in her alphabet. And but I loved her. I thought she was amazing. She had an American accent. I should have remembered that when I impersonated her.
Well, it's time to meet some other friends in this Christmas episode. As is tradition, we have a number of special guests, often repeat guests, who have become part
favorites.
And expectation, favourites of the Christmas episode. And one of them is, of course, the wonderful Trevor Ashley, who's been having quite an adventure this year with Queens of the Universe, that series that was filmed in the UK. And he's got lots of exciting news. And, of course, he's midway through his wonderful panto, The White Mermaid. The White Mermaid or The Little Lotus, which is playing at the Seymour Centre. So I caught up with Trev during the week, and here's my chat with him. Trevor Ashley, hello.
Hello, Peter Eyes.
This is your fourth appearance on stages.
I was the first guest, wasn't I?
You were in the first five.
First five.
Miss
yes.
Lamond was number one.
That's right.
But this is your fourth appearance. You're becoming my Miriam Margolyes.
Oh. I'm old and I fart a lot.
Don't fart. Yeah. How are you? I haven't seen you for ages. I've been, like many of us, watching you on Queens of the Universe, which
yes.
was an extraordinary experience for
it
you.
It was. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, look, working with that kind of level of production, with, you know, the amazing amount of money that they'd thrown at the show, like I'd never seen anything like it. It looks like The Voice was made for $1.50, you know. It really does. And being able to stand on set every day and get interviewed by Graham Norton was quite, you know, extraordinary, really. You sort of feel like, wow, this may never happen again, you know. It was quite a surreal experience.
But not only Mr. Norton, but also you were being adjudicated by those
Michelle
amazing
Visage,
women.
Vanessa Williams, Trixie Mattel and Mel B, who have all been actually, I have to say, very lovely and kept in touch. And in fact, also, I bumped into Graham Norton. Here's a few name drops for you. I was at the opening night of Old Friends, the new Stephen Sondheim that Cameron McIntosh had put together, and I was a guest of Cameron's. And Graham was in the private suite with Cameron having drinks at intervals. So I was standing there literally between Cameron McIntosh and Graham Norton having a three-way conversation. So that was a pretty amazing moment to be there in the West End and just having a big old chat to these two people that I've worked with.
We're going to have to get out the vacuum cleaner when we finish and just vacuum
up
those names.
All the names, I know.
But speaking of the West End, of course, you did your show in the West End and in New York. Tell us about that.
Yes, so I thought after Queen of the Universe, it was good to go and be in those places and get seen. And I've been lucky that I've got my visas now to work in both countries, which is a big game changer, because the thing is, it takes it's a lot of effort to get them. But now that I have them, I can basically hold on to them as long as I'd like. And it's time, I think, to spread my wings a little. I feel like I've achieved so much here in this country that it's time to sort of give somewhere else a go and try and just see what comes in. And also, if there is an audition, to be able to say, I'll put a tape down for that. Oh, yes, I can work. I can work there. Yeah. So, because people don't like, the producers certainly don't like you, don't like to have to try and get you a visa. They don't want to have to work that hard. I think the thing is, if you can say, I'm ready, I can do this, I'm available now, and I can start work next Monday, it just makes you more attractive, really.
It's time for us to share you with the world.
Exactly, and it's fun. And look, I think that's what Queen of the Universe has done. I mean, crazy stories, like as I had 3 months overseas going to different European countries and to New York and doing my show and seeing that there were fans of my show, of Queen of the Universe, who all came to watch me in cabaret in New York, and that those people were like, I'd sing a number from the show and they'd all be like, oh, you know, they would be so excited. I walked into Gucci in New York to have a little browse, and the sales assistant almost had a conniption. He was so excited and had to get photos with me to show his boyfriend that I'd come into Gucci, and he said, you were robbed, you should have won. I said, I know. So it's been great, and London was really wonderful, and I enjoyed being there and seeing. I think there's some really amazing theatre being done over there at the moment, and a lot of really interesting work happening, and a lot of new work happening that I think is that we're going to see a lot more of those shows.
Well, certainly something like Guys and Dolls, that immersive experience, which is playing at the Bridge.
Yes, it was extraordinary. Like that was one of the greatest nights in theatre I've ever been to, and so to see something like that, I actually have to say, in terms of what was on when I was there, the London season kind of shat on the Broadway season this year. It was so strong, and there was so much happening. And, you know, from the Lacage in Regent's Park to that amazing Sunset Boulevard with Nicole Scherzinger to Old Friends, something really classic and classy, to Oklahoma, to the Brokeback Mountain musical that had opened at the Soho Theatre. There were so many...
imaginative reinventions of shows that we know and
love. Lots of that, lots of big names in plays as well. Ian McKellen was doing a play. You know, they've just opened The Backstairs Billy with Luke...
Evans.
Luke Evans and fabulous...
Mrs. Crawley.
Mrs. Crawley, exactly.
Penelope Wilton.
You know, so there's some amazing stuff going on in London, and I think it's an exciting time to be there.
Yeah, great. Well, of course, you are almost past halfway current season of The White Mermaid,
yes.
Which is the annual... Naughty Panto, which you have delivered Sydney audiences for quite a few years now. How's it going?
Oh, look, it's amazing. The response is always so great from these pantos. I have the best time because there's just... It is so outrageous and so stupid. And this one in particular, I think just because... Last year got to be a bit sexy, but a bit not, and a bit... You know, be all about King's Cross and be all about Sydney.
Moulin Scrooge.
Mm. That this year I've kept the same cast, but dressed them up as fish. And but we have fantastic costumes, and it's been a really fun thing to do a sort of Disney meets something that's not very Disney, being the White Lotus, and mashing them together and trying to see what would happen. And Phil Scott and I, when we wrote it, we were laughing a lot at the ideas of sort of putting the Little Mermaid into this White Lotus world and just see what would happen. And it's very, very funny.
It feels like we're on a tropical island at the moment with the downpour outside.
I know.
It's a hot summer's night in Sydney.
I know. I wish I had aircon in the lounge room.
But it's lovely to see those very handsome boys back again. And, of course, also the legendary Carlotta.
The amazing Carol. She's now 80. She has had her 80th birthday. And we... really love working together, and she was going to retire, and now she's not only doing 8 shows a week of my musical, my panto, but she's coming back doing a cabaret at the Hayes, then she's off doing a tour with Craig Bennett. She's now the busiest woman in show business.
That's fantastic.
In her 80th year.
Fantastic. So The White Mermaid, of course, playing the Seymour Centre, and listeners can purchase tickets through the box office.
Com, yes.
Yeah. So what about 2024? What's ahead for you?
Well, I'm going to move to London.
You're not.
I am.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Well, look, it's one of those things that I haven't... It's been a bit weird because I haven't sort of made a big announcement about it, but yes, I've decided I'm going to go and give it a red hot go.
Oh, bravo, that's great.
It's exciting, and as I say, I think they're doing some exciting work, and I think there's opportunities over there. So I'm hoping that, you know, that I will be able to sort of have an amazing experience and just give it a try. I've never lived out of Australia permanently. I've obviously travelled a lot and worked a lot in other countries, but I feel like it's time to, you know, spread my wings and get out of here for a minute. And I think certainly what COVID showed us is just how far away and how isolated we can be in this country. And I think just being somewhere where there is opportunity to work across, you know, multiple places and for it not to take 25 hours to get there is hugely helpful.
Will we get to see you before you go?
Yes. I'll be doing the Trevor Ashley First Annual Farewell Tour, which is going to be at Padua RSL on the 19th and 20th of January, and at Chapel Off Chapel in Melbourne on the 21st and 22nd of January. And then I have to run off because I have a little gig that I need to get to in London. So it's quite exciting.
Exciting times ahead.
Yes.
Well, Trevor, it's always great to catch up with you, so thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
My last summer Christmas for a minute.
Yes, you'll be rugging up in the sort of the cold of London.
In the cold, who knows? Or maybe I'll hate that and go to, you know, the Canary Islands or something.
Something close. All right. Thanks for talking and twerking. Talking. Thanks for talking with us and twerking. It's very good. And lots of love.
Thank you, darling. You too.
This year it's palm trees and warm ocean breezes. The next may be snowfall and even some sneezes. Nobody knows where December may find us. A jet plane can put half the planet behind us. In this tiny new world, home can change any day. But wherever we live, love is not far away. At home or afar, each of us has a star, and Christmas will find us wherever we are. Old friends and new friends, we gather together, a heartwarming circle, no matter the weather. We'll tell our new friends of our treasures of memories and hang family heirlooms on new Christmas trees. In this tiny new world, home can change any day, but wherever we live, love is not far away. At home or afar, each of us has a star, and Christmas will find us wherever we are. Northern Star or Southern Cross, whichever guides us, we never are lost. In this tiny new world, home can change any day, but wherever we live, love is not far away. At home or afar, each of us has a star.
And as is tradition also, that was Christmas Will Find Us Wherever We Are, sung by Lauren Schmutter, and of course written by our dear friend Ron Krager with Tina Messina. It's always lovely to hear that, isn't it, Kate?
It is. I love it.
Yeah. Now, you spoke about a possible title for the sequel to your memoir, which was Centrelink to...
It said more Centrelink than Central Casting the last 30 years.
But... delightfully, there's been a bit of a turnaround, probably since your birthday on October 1st.
Absolutely.
Things are looking up.
Things are looking up.
So bring us up to date with what you've been doing over the last couple of months.
Well, I've just spent 5 weeks in New Zealand making a disaster movie, and it was the most extraordinary experience.
Did you ever think you'd be doing a disaster film at... this
never,
stage of your career?
Never in my life.
It's
never.
Actually one of my favourite genres. Oh. I love a disaster film. The Towering Inferno and the Poseidon Adventure. Which
absolutely.
Those Irwin Allen films.
Me too. And I've always loved watching them. But it never occurred to me. You know, I always thought, oh no, I probably... maybe, you know, I might be cast in a kind of period picture. And, you know, that was about... I mean, honestly, having made one, I don't think I ever wanted to do anything else. I did my own stunt. I'm so proud of it. That's all I talk about. But I mean, disaster movies are extraordinary because what they do for an actor, if they I mean, if you're lucky enough to have the writer and the director interested in the stories of the characters within the disaster and not just the effects and the engineering and the extraordinary kind of five camera setups and all of that unbelievable stuff that goes on around you, that they're actually interested in characters and personality and stuff like that, but that you get to do things you would never do in an ordinary movie. I mean, because you're reacting to, and it is, it's not acting, it is famously, you know, that thing of real acting, which is reacting, and that's reacting to unbelievable circumstance, something that you would never, well, ever find yourself in, probably. I remember the first time I acted, because I, you know, read the two scenes I was sent and to screen test for it, and they had a small blurb about, you know, something, you thought, oh, well, something. And clear from the first scene to the second scene, something not very good had happened. But when I read the script for the first time, I was going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I was turning over pages going, can't get any worse. Oh, it has. It just went on and on and on, getting more and more incredibly disastrously but believably shocking.
How does an opportunity like this come about that you God are knows. Suddenly in a disaster knows. Film?
How does that happen to this dear little lady living in Portsmouth? No. I mean, there is this marvellous casting director called Ben who lives in Queensland, and I got it, and I don't know.
You said you did your own stunts, so yeah. And it's a plane crash in water. Were you in water
no.
for a period
oh, yes,
of time?
Oh, yes, I was. I was wet, filming? Yes, yeah. We were, yes. Well, my stunt, our stunt, there were four of us who did this.
Did you do it, Shelley Winters?
Well, she had a double.
She had a double.
I think famously.
Shelley had a double, did she,
yeah.
when she swam
when she dived
underwater
in,
to...
Yes, I think famously. I think that somebody sends it up very brilliantly. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, blonde hair. Bette Midler apparently does a very funny send-up of Shelley diving into the water. And you can kind of see there's a different person. But it's pretty fab. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
It's a wonderful moment in the Poseidon.
It's a wonderful moment. Yeah. And I did have a stunt double, and there was a stunt, unbelievable stunt team of about 10 men. And this wonderful young woman. But we all did it. We wore, in case we fell off the 30-foot ladder, vertical ladder, metal ladder, with steps that went from 6 inches to 18 inches. So it was, and you were wet, you know, you very kind of heavy clothing. So it was quite a difficult climb. But if we fell off, we did have a wire. But we didn't. Mm. And we did it. And we had to do it, I think, about at least 4 times a day, so maybe 15 times altogether we did it.
Wow.
And I loved every single minute of it. We'll do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear. But also, you're going back on the stage
as well as
the silver screen.
I know.
In Gaslight, which is coming out of the Queensland Theatre Company.
Yes. We do it at the Queensland Theatre Company, and then it becomes a commercial tour of Australia.
Mm.
So
it's a play originally written by Patrick Hamilton, who also wrote Rope, I think, which Hitchcock adapted for the screen. And this new version of Gaslight has been adapted by Joanna Wright and Patty Jamison, and directed by Lee Lewis,
yes,
who's the artistic
the wonderful
director
Lee
of QTC.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Which I can't wait. I've never worked with her. I mean, I worked at the stables and met her, but I've never worked with her before. I did on the Shore of the Wide World, and she was there then. But it's exciting because I think the new version, it's not a new version, it's still Gaslit, and it's still Victorian England, and it's still the same characters, with the exception of the policeman is not there.
Who do you play?
I play the housekeeper.
So is that the role Angela Lansbury played?
No, she played the maid.
The maid, right.
She played the young maid.
Right.
And the housekeeper is kind of, she's unusual. I quite like her. I mean, she's very kind.
Is she mysterious?
I think she is. Right. I'd like to think she is.
Right.
And so I'm kind of working on that. I mean, because she's a servant, but she's been a servant in this particular house since she was a girl. And so she's come up through the ranks to be a companion housekeeper, which is quite a, you know, a good, that's about the best position you can kind of reach in that sort of stratus, you know, in that kind of class system.
It's extraordinary circumstance, isn't it, that this woman has really grown up in this house, serving the masters of the house.
Serving, before there was a mistress, that part of the mystery's about, and then these new people come in and she's, again, the kind of really working, she's apparently working for both of them, but she's more in tune with the young woman.
Mm. After QTC, we're playing the QPAC. Of course, it's taken on a national tour by Rodney Rigby.
Yes.
Who is producing it. The Melbourne Comedy Theatre, Canberra Theatre Centre, Perth Regal Theatre, Newcastle Civic Theatre, Parramatta Riverside, and then Sydney at the Roslyn Packer Theatre in August.
Yeah. So it's kind of...
it's very exciting.
It is very exciting and very unusual and wonderful.
Something that makes us exciting every year also is Rhonda Birchmore. Whenever we talk to Rhonda, we know it's Christmas. Christmas is synonymous with Rhonda, and Rhonda is synonymous with Christmas. So, again, here's a conversation that I recorded. Catch up with Rhonda earlier in the week. Music. Well, haul out the holly, put up your tree, jingle your bells, and talk to Rhonda Birchmore. It must be close to Christmas again.
Oh yes, Peter, it's come so quickly this year. I mean, I've just Hasn't put away it? Last year's Christmas decorations, and they're out again.
Do you put Christmas all over the house every year?
My Christmas is for the last couple of years. I mean, I was with Hairspray last year in Adelaide. But prior to that, I've got a little place on the Gold Coast, and since I've, you know, Mum and Dad and my sister have left this world, because we always had a traditionally huge Christmas at the Birchmores, it was all a bit too sad when they all went. So just my husband and daughter, we go up by the beach and have prawns and champagne and a very simple Christmas. But this year, because I've got so much work leading right up to Christmas Eve, I am probably going to do a traditional Christmas, and I've already got the tree up and looking very, very festive already.
Yeah, you must be the busiest girl in showbiz. Following your socials on Instagram and Facebook, you're always doing something. It's amazing.
Yeah, like, my goodness, I think December I have 2 days off, and I worked out there's something like 52 different songs, most of them Christmas, but quite a few other things whacked in there as well to learn the lyrics to and to host events. It's a lot to kind of take in, so I hope the old brain does it.
But I remember we celebrated last year. I think this is your 40th year in showbiz, isn't it?
Yeah, coming up 41. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot of years, and still loving everything I do, Pete.
That's great that you can still love it at four decades down the track, and here's to the next decade.
thank you.
Rhonda, you no doubt would have been aware of the huge success of the Barbie movie, and I know that you have an infatuation with Barbie dolls. Anyone who followed your socials during Hairspray would have seen the various characters interpreted as Barbie dolls. You obviously enjoyed the film.
I loved the film, and I just think Margot Robbie is just exquisite. I mean, not only... does she look like a Barbie doll, more beautiful, but she's really smart too. And I did enjoy the film, but was it Ryan Gosling who was Kenny? He, for me, kind of stole the show. And all I can say is I can see Barbie the musical based on that coming out, and a huge tap number with all the Kens. I loved the movie, and there were so many of my dollies that I did see in there, plus there was lots that weren't in there, of course, too, because I do I'm up to about 400, so that's quite a few.
Well, when did the infatuation with Barbie start? Obviously as a girl, but you've continued the collection.
Well, actually, no. I was never gifted a Barbie doll as a kid. Of course, I knew about Barbie, but it was when my daughter was born. I think I went to, is it FAO Schwartz, that huge toy store in New York, and I saw this whole Barbie world, and I went, oh, my gosh, what have I been missing out on? And so I bought her a few Barbies, mind you, Bob Mackie Barbies. She wasn't allowed to really play with them, but I blamed Lexi on, I gave her a few, and some of these Barbies now are worth, you know, thousands of dollars. And I came out of the closet, so to speak, as a real Barb. They, you know, kind of said that it's actually me that loves them, not Lexi. About 20 years ago, I came out when she was about 8 years old, and said, yeah, it's actually me that adores these. And I've got this huge glass cabinet built with all these incredible Barbies, be it, everything from the pop art Barbies where you get Lucille Ball, and I've got Cher, I've got Ella Fitzgerald, I've got Elizabeth Taylor from, you know, it's quite a collection. And probably I've devalued it because I've opened the boxes, but I don't care. I want to look at them rather than keep them in boxes.
Yes, as investments. Well, I'm sure this Christmas, a lot of little girls, and look, I'm sure a lot of little boys also will be gifted Barbie dolls from Santa, especially on the tail of the success of that film.
For sure. And you know what? I am such a, you know, most of my friends are part of, the gay community, and so many of those, when I try to buy something online or something, are usually young men who have got these incredible collections, whether it's, you know, and like absolutely my taste. And I often buy from them. And the other thing is too, Pete, you look at, as I go back to Bob Mackie, who used to do the gowns for Cher and Bette Midler, some of the designs are so exquisite, and I sometimes bring my Barbie to my whoever's designing a gown for me, and I say, can you do something like this? So they are a bit of an inspo for me too.
Fabulous, fabulous. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you're going to be spreading your Christmas cheer at all sorts of festive occasions over the next couple of weeks before we hit Christmas. Can't wait to see you at Carols in the Domain in Sydney, a big event.
It is a massive. Last year was the first year I'd done it, and they really spoilt me in terms of the amount of. I think they were so chuffed to, because I used to do carols in Melbourne, and then Domain said, "Oh, we will offer you, you know, all of these things," and so I got to dance and sing with the Janice Breen dancers, which is such a tradition. This incredible troupe of dancers, choreographed by Chris Horsey. And then I got to sing with Hugh Sheridan and Leo Sayer, which was an absolute highlight, two of my glorious, you know, pin-up boyfriends. And, I was with Todd, I was with Rachel Beck, and mind you, I had my $1 million red Linda Breton gown that cost an arm and a leg, and I walked out and the gods opened and it teamed down. And, of course, we can't control the weather, but we sang "Oh, Come Holy Faithful," and it was how my eyelashes stayed on, I don't know, but it was I got quite a drenching out there.
And my old stomping ground, Ballarat, you're going to be up there as well.
I'm doing Ballarat, yes. That is a very different kind of situation. It's with my gorgeous musical director, who you're a fan of, Jack Earl. We are doing songs from the album, A Red Hot Swinging Christmas, and it's not the big band, but as Jack has always told me, if it can work with just piano, and he's like an orchestra in itself, it can work, you know, these big, you know, because he wrote all those arrangements, and it's just such a fun gig, the Ballarat Piano Bar there. So I'm there, I think I'm there on the, where am I, the 19th of December. Doing some, yeah, some Christmas favourites. And, of course, I've got the later on that week with the big band at the Brunswick Ballroom on the 23rd of December. We've got the full 18-piece big band, you know, and doing, I know you're a fan of the album, Pete. We're doing songs from that and a few extras.
Yes, I was my wonderful stocking filler last year. Several people got a copy of the album, and I'm looking forward to playing it on repeat during this Christmas, because it is a most wonderful album.
Oh, thank you, Pete. And you know, the funny thing was, and I thank you so much for your support. You know, Jack and I produced it ourselves, and then ABC picked it up and paid us, you know, was a token fee. That's what I would call it, to get it produced and get it out there. And because, you know, how many people buy CDs these days, you know, and it's all kind of more, you know, Spotify or whatever. But we've actually had two very decent royalty checks, so from the sales. So we're doing really like better than we could have ever imagined with that little album. And it wasn't about the money for either of us, really. It was to, this was our project that we worked extensively on through all those COVID periods in lockdown in Melbourne. And it was like, you know, the little engine that could. We actually got in and recorded the album live in Melbourne, and I'm thrilled with the result.
And it's still available through your website, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You can. I'll do you a signed copy if you want to go to rhondabirchmore.com, a beautiful Christmas spiller, and I sign it. And because I reckon they're going to be collector's items when CDs actually, you know, go away for a while. You know, I was thinking, but I just haven't got round to it, to put it on vinyl. And that's still very much an option probably for next year, Pete.
Yeah, great. I feel a bit like Moira. It's like we've had a Rhonda infomercial there with all of your gigs and your CDs.
Oh, I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
You know, actually, you know, you know, it's kind of this is the way of the world, I think. You know, we don't have, Hey, Hey, It's Saturday or lovely Bert Newton or those shows, too many of those to plug your things. So I'm grateful. Thank you, Pete.
Yeah, well, you are a regular on the Stages podcast. We've spoken to you several times, and you're an important part of our Christmas episode. So thank you for joining us again, and a very, very Merry Christmas to you, Rhonda Birchmore, and your family.
And, well, Merry Christmas to you, my darling heart, and to all your wonderful listeners. And you do, and I'm not peeing in your pocket either, you know, I kind of get a big smile every time I see, you know, well, I've been in the business for so long, I know quite a few people, but you get some really great talent on there, and it's really, really great listening, hearing their stories and all of that. You find out things you never knew.
Yeah, it's been a good year. We're going to listen to We Need a Little Christmas now from the musical Mame. I think it's only important that we listen to that, because that's a role you've played as well.
I played it twice. And you know what, Pete? If I had my wish list type of thing, you know, I see that damn Sarah Brightman's doing, you know, my Norma in Sunset Boulevard, you know, well, you know, what, you can't fight with that. But if someone said to me, you know, what would be my favourite musical to do, and I think I'm at the right age to play Auntie Mame. Yes, I have done it twice with the production company, but I would adore to. There's so many great songs in that show, and it's a great. She's such a great character, and I think there's a fair dose of old Auntie Mame in me.
There absolutely is. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas, Pete. Much love. Bye.
Call out the holly, put up the tree before my spirit falls again. Fill up the stocking, I may be rushing things, but deck the halls again now. said yes and need a little Christmas right this very minute. It hasn't snowed a single flurry, but Santa dear, we're in a hurry, so climb down the chimney, put up the brightest string lights I've ever seen, slice up the fruit cake. It's time we hung some tinsel on that evergreen bough. Because I've grown a little leaner, grown a little colder, grown a little sadder, grown a little older, and I need a little angel sitting on my shoulder. We need a little Christmas light.
It's always hard to find a place to start, don't you find?
Let's start at the very beginning, which is a very good place to start.
Always, always. Mark Humphrey's Man About Town, Urbane Sophisticate Theatre File, and Foyer Favourite. Welcome to the...
Foyer Favourite, I'm very happy with that. My dream was always to be the next Maria Venuti. That was really... I used to see her in the social pages at the opening of shows, and I thought that could be... If I really... set my mind to it, I could do that.
You never will be, because there are two things you don't have.
Yes, two big buzzies, that's it.
No, I was going to say charm and personality.
Oh, no.
But of course you have charm and personality. You just finished a great tour, The War on 2023.
A triumph, yes, a lot of fun. We went around the country sort of satirising the year that was, and so... I guess I should forward promote The War on 2024, our next tour, assuming that we come back next year.
Because, of course, you can't do The War in 2023. It's out of date.
It's out of date.
Passage used by date.
It has expired. That's it.
It's expired. Is it difficult to be a satirist?
I think this year has been particularly difficult. Mm. I think this has been a less funny year than previous years. I do think we were spoilt somewhat during the Abbott Turnbull Morrison years, and I think the Albanese government is sort of just a bit less funny, and
he needs to eat an onion or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just chuck us a bone, or spear tackle a child like Morrison did, or appoint himself to multiple ministries like Morrison did.
He was the gift that kept giving.
He was marvelous in that sense, and and then globally, of course, it's been a shit show as well. So no, it's not the best time to do it. Just because it's just a bit too bleak.
Yeah,
I think there's room for levity in that space, but I think some of the topics are just so depressing, I don't think it is necessarily useful.
Well, something you have embraced, of course, is the theatre going, which I touched on earlier on. And your speciality subject is musicals.
Yes,
it's the musical theatre. Yeah. You have a... it's X now, isn't it? It's so long, Twitter. I feel dirty every time I open X.
Yes, I still call it Twitter and still call it tweets. I'm not really ready to accept... I'm not ready to accept the new name. Right. It'll be Twitter for a while for me. But yes, at Mark's Musicals, for those of you who haven't already raced to your phone to subscribe or follow.
They're doing it now. I can hear all of those fingers scratching on.
I just caused another Optus crash.
Remember that. That was weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, what a time that was.
The illusion of the podcast. So Mark's Musicals, if you'd like to follow Mark and catch up on what he's been seeing. But I thought it would be great to have you in for the Christmas episode of Stages. Thank you. To talk about some of the highlights of theatre going that you've experienced in 2023.
I think it's been a fantastic year for musicals.
It has.
I think we've been so lucky. I'm actually almost dreading 2024 because what could possibly... top this. I think in terms of some of those massive shows have been done very, very well. The revival of Wicked still has the magic. I thought Courtney Mosmer was a fantastic Glinda who I thought managed to find new little moments of comedy in that role that we all know so well. So for her to still be able to kind of keep that fresh. I mean, the whole thing was terrific, but I just thought she in particular stood out. Tina... I had seen Tina in London and had thought it was sort of okay. And then I saw it here and I loved it. I thought it sounds one of those things where you're sort of exaggerating, but I genuinely thought our group were world class. I thought the Australian production of Tina was phenomenal.
So you think that's what's lifted it for you, the casting and the energy that they...
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, I'm reluctant to criticise the London cast because they were also strong. But I think energy is certainly the right word, especially for that show. And it was it had the balance right of humour as well, and I was thrilled with that. And then of course, Tina herself passed away just a couple of weeks after it opened, and so that kind of
added a great
another dimension
to it. Absolutely. I suppose a lot of people were going to see it as a way of paying respect to Tina.
Absolutely.
And to sort of she's back in their psyche, so wanted to go and have that what do you do when you go to the Pope? You have an audience with Tina.
Right, exactly, yes. And so, if you go to the Theatre Royal, they'll bathe your feet and you can kiss the ring. And I thought that was absolutely marvellous. And so, obviously, Ruva, apologies, I've never said her name out loud before, Ruva Nguyenya, I think, but as Tina, just a knockout. And that would be... I mean, you can see why I think she maybe does 6 shows a week as opposed to 8, because I think that would take a hell of a lot out of you.
Yeah.
That's a real marathon, that show. I really liked Beauty and the Beast as well. I thought that...
Did you see it, that first Australian production? You would have been a babe.
I was. And the great thrill for me was that I saw it... So I guess that would have been 95. And I saw it with Michael Cormack as the Beast and Sharon Millichip as Belle, and who was sitting directly in front of me at Beauty and the Beast but Michael Cormack and Sharon Millichip, and also Rachel Beck, who'd done the Melbourne run. And
that's a lovely full circle. Yes, serendipitous.
Yes, exactly. So that added to them. I think that was magical is the word that comes to mind for that show.
I thought you said and Hugh was sitting in front of me, but you said
Hugh. Yes, indeed.
Was Hugh doing it when you saw it 20 years ago? Or was it Scott Irwin by then?
I think it was Scott Irwin. I don't think... I've looked at my program and I don't have Hugh in my program, so I think I would have had Scott. But, and so I thought... And there were moments where I wished Michael could have gotten up there and done it. I thought that, that really captured the magic. I also liked that now it's got Angela Lansbury's narration. That's a new touch,
rather than David Hodges Stiers.
Yes, Ogden Stiers.
Ogden Stiers. I think that's right. Thank you. Yeah.
So that was just nice to hear her voice again, especially as she had only recently passed away. And I got to give a shout out to the young man who played Gaston, because on opening night a swing went on. Jackson Head.
Yeah.
I thought he was brilliant, and for a character that you're supposed to really not like, found him. He managed to, you know, he delivered the role, but I also really liked the guy, and I thought he.
It's a difficult role to get right. You know, yeah. Sort of that balance of charm. We have to sort of like him, but also he's the villain.
Yes. Yeah. Hairspray. I enjoyed way more than I expected.
Yeah.
That was absolutely such a fun night in the theatre, and a triumph for the actress playing Tracy Carmel Rodriguez.
Yep.
Her first professional musical theatre. That was her debut. And she was so winning. As I was watching her, that was the word that kept coming to mind. Just such a winning performance. And you were rooting for her. You were rooting for Tracy, the character. And especially in a cast that was, you know, stacked with...
with stellar performances. Yeah. Jacobson, McKenney, Birchmore.
Birchmore, exactly. That's right. Mm. Bobby Fox.
Yeah.
And so she absolutely shone. But the whole, all that young cast as well, her best friend Mackenzie Dunn as Tracy's friend Penny, I thought was brilliantly funny as well.
And do you know who Mackenzie Dunn is?
Is she the daughter of someone?
No, she's a granddaughter.
Who's she the granddaughter of?
Great Jill Perryman.
Oh my goodness. Mm. Well, there you go.
So it's in the DNA.
Oh, marvellous.
To be an excellent music theatre performer.
That's the secret. So, yeah, she was sensational. But that was... probably, yeah, that was maybe the most fun I had in a theatre this year.
Yeah.
Just joyous, absolutely joyous.
Did you see Miss Saigon?
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. I've had such a good year at the theatre. I think we've been so lucky. I thought, I'd actually never seen a production of Miss Saigon before, other than the filmed London production.
Yeah.
From 2014, I think it was. I had the good fortune of interviewing Bublil and Schoenberg last year in Melbourne.
You did, that's right. Yeah. They came out to Do You Hear the People Sing?
That's right. And so Ender Markey, wonderful producer, arranged for me to do an in-conversation event with them. And that was, you know, as you can imagine, a massive thrill. And but I'd never actually seen Miss Saigon on stage. But I knew it, you know, quite well. And I thought that was just absolutely... hit it out of the park. I thought that was a beautiful night of theatre. I couldn't believe the young actress playing Kim. She's only 19, I think. Is it Abigail Adriano? Was it as Kim? And Sean Marley Moore as the engineer was fantastic. And also, shout out to the little boy playing Tam, who broke everyone's heart.
Always going to steal the show.
Yeah.
That role.
I did. I was inquiring about that. I asked someone who's seen it a few times just to kind of keep tabs on, because obviously there's several children that they use, and I was like, how did opening night compare to the other, you know? And I was told, oh well, you know, one of the other kids, he's a little bit older, so it doesn't quite,
yeah,
you know,
that's a cute factor.
That's it, big difference between, you know, 4 and 6 on so I thought that was I also loved in Sydney they had Sweeney Todd. I thought that production of Sweeney Todd with Ben Ringo
had come up from Victorian State Opera.
Ah, right.
And I think it is playing a season again next year.
Oh, is it? Oh, good.
Yeah. But it's a wonderful piece. I mean, it's my favourite Sondheim. And it was a terrific production directed by Stuart Mordner.
Yes.
Of course, you're talking about the big commercial productions, yes, musical theatre productions. But what about some of the fringe musical theatre that you've seen? Of course, in Sydney, we have the Hayes Theatre and the Squabblogic, mm-hmm, and various companies that are presenting fair.
Yes, well, Squabblogic. So we very much enjoyed On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever.
Yeah.
That was a surprising gem, because I didn't really know that show.
Well, a show too that people rarely get to see, if ever.
Mm, yeah, and so that really worked for me. That was the Seymour. And also, obviously, the Seymours had The Dismissal, which, I mean, Laura Murphy, as far as I'm concerned, if I could buy shares in Laura Murphy, I would. I'm very excited about her next show. I think it's called Zombie for the Hayes. I just think just an absolute genius songwriter. So many great moments in that show. At the Hayes, of course, always punching above its weight. I really enjoyed City of Angels. That was one that I really didn't know a great deal about. Sort of has a, you know, a show within a show.
Yeah, it's very clever conceit, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Sort of the it's very meta. There's the yep. there's the 20s. No, is it the 20s? No, it's not the 20s. It's the crime novel, and then within the writer's world.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The gumshoe detective story, and then also the writer's story. And yeah, again, one of those things with Hayes where it's a very small space, but they packed so much into it. The show, I gotta say, I've gotta give a massive shout out to the show, and I hope that it tours. I hope it has a long life. I have never laughed harder in a theater than when I saw Murder for Two. I think that is the funniest show I have ever seen. It was hysterically funny. It's just a two-hander, the two leads, Maverick Newman and Gabby Bolt. Maverick plays something like 11 characters, each of them clearly defined. It was hysterically funny.
Is it an American piece? Where does it come from?
I think it is an American piece, but I was not familiar with it at all. No. I don't. Yeah, I struggle to believe it could be any funnier than what was put on at the Hayes. I just think they found every possible avenue for humor that you could. It was like, I don't know, I felt like five laughs a minute or something. Yeah, so that is coming back. Well, actually, I think it's on now at the Hayes for a Christmas run. So if you can get tickets to that, if you can get to Sydney, please go and see that. Brilliantly funny.
Do you think people have worked out that we're recording this at the end of November?
Yeah, I think that they've worked that out.
That's right. Work with us.
20 minutes ago. That's all right. I was really trying there to maintain.
No, no, I think you've done very well up until that point.
Oh well.
No. But yes, go and see Murder for Two. It's playing now at the Hayes.
There you go.
Look, Mark, a lot of the shows that you've talked about are Sydney centric. You know, they've played in Sydney. We've seen them, but a lot of them are touring around the country
yes.
at the moment. So if any of the shows that Mark has talked about, go and see, because you won't be disappointed. They are all excellent.
Well, I should give a quick shout to a show that I saw in a different city. I saw, but it is now coming to Sydney, which is Anne Juliet, and that was a really fun night out. And I thought Amy LaPalma in particular stood out in that. She's got a moment where she sings a Celine Dion song, which stops the show. That was brilliant. That was great fun show.
Terrific. What are you doing for Christmas?
Well, the weather outside. What am I doing for Christmas? Going to go to Inverloch and
family Christmas.
Yes,
and all that.
Stay with my girlfriend's family, assuming that we're still together at the time that this episode is released.
I think you will be.
Okay.
That's very good. Well, happy Christmas, and thank you so much for... well, this is your second time on the podcast this year, of course, because you joined us for the...
Yes.
The Tony.
Aiming for three next year.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get you back. We'll get you back. Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas, people.
And that was a conversation with the wonderful Mark Humphreys, who many of you would know.
I do.
One of our favourite satirists.
Yes.
Who, just finished an extensive tour. And before that, We Need a Little Christmas from the wonderful Rhonda Birchmore. Kate, your grandchild, granddaughter, we've certainly talked about in previous Christmas episodes, but how's the chew?
The chew is very, very well. She is incredibly entertaining. I spend Fridays with her. And we had a lot to talk about last Friday because apparently the fire alarm went off in their building. They live on the 17th floor. Went off twice the other night. And so that meant my son had to carry her up and down 17 flights of stairs twice. And she was saying, Gwani, this man, evacuate, evacuate. You know, like, you know, that terrible sound that was very loud. It is really shocking. But the most, so anyway, we talked that through and we decided that maybe there was a glitch in the system and it wasn't exactly him. And she was very interesting. She said that the little boy who was 6 months younger than her, he said, he was in a sleeping bag, Granny. I was in my pajamas. I said, well, that shows you how 6 months makes a huge difference to one's life.
Christmas is often about the kids, so it must be very exciting as you head
yes.
towards Christmas Day. Have you got the present organised?
I've got a couple of them organised, and I've got a couple in mind. She does get, you know, she has other grandparents, of course, and her parents, and she has friends and, you know, things like that. So you've got to kind of listen to what other people are doing, but I usually find something that she hasn't got. I hope I've done it. I think I have.
Yeah. I want to give a special hello to a guest that we've had on the podcast in, it might have been series 3 or 4, but I interviewed a lovely couple who have contributed much to the Australian theatre scene, Peter Keogh and Sasha Mahboob. Now, Sasha has been through a bit of a rough patch this year, so we're sending out all our love to Sasha, and we're thinking of him as he charts this journey at the moment. But of course, he made his debut in The Great Waltz with J.C. Williamson's and appeared in musicals such as Funny Girl, which launched Jill Perryman.
Yes, Jill Perryman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
wow.
He'd done a lot as a performer and then worked as a dresser on many musicals.
Wow.
And often based at Her Majesty's Theatre in Perth.
Also, and he has a wonderful name.
Isn't Sasha a wonderful name?
But his surname is wonderful
Mahboob.
As well. I know.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, and he and Pete produced for a while, and at the Mad, they brought Debbie Reynolds over to do a version of Irene.
Oh, I remember that
in
happening.
Perth. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was very exciting. And of course, he ran Morning Melodies in WA for a while as well. So he's contributed immensely to theatre in Australia. So we give all our love to Sash at the moment and wish him all the best.
Yes. Yeah, and if he wants to come to Gaslight, I'd love to meet him.
Oh, yes, when you're in Perth.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Sash, Kate wants you to come to Gaslight and say hello. One of our favourites on the podcast also is the magnificent Geraldine Turner.
Well, what can you say about her?
Well, Jeb's back on the stage too. She's doing Sundays for Wicked in Sydney, and she'll be playing that till February. And she talks about that in the conversation that
fantastic.
We recorded earlier.
I bet she's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
She is amazing, I think.
We went to opening night of Wicked.
We did?
Yeah.
We did.
It's a great musical, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's great fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
Being presented by Crossroads Live, of course, which is formerly GFO, or the parent partner of the Gordon Frost organisation. So without any further ado, let's catch up with Jeb. Geraldine Turner, one of Stage's favourites.
Thank you, P.
This has become an annual tradition where you join us for the Christmas episode.
That's right, and I love it. Don't you stop it. Don't you stop asking me.
No, we'll be talking for many years to come,
I'm sure. Let's hope so, eh?
You enjoy Christmas, don't you?
No,
did I? Have I misinterpreted that? Because I've spent a couple of Christmases with you, and you put the tree up. And
yeah, I do all of that, and I used to do lots of dinners for people who didn't like have families and things like that, and I enjoyed that aspect of it. What I hate about Christmas, and it started already,
right.
Of course it started way back in November, all the ads start, you know,
right.
with happy families and Disney Christmases, you know,
right.
and I get a little depressed by that because my family was never like that.
Yeah,
you know, there are always major fights at Christmas. So, yeah, I guess to me, I suppose some people do have those lovely Disney families. Do you know any?
One or two. But I suppose Christmas is a time for the kids, isn't it? Really?
It is, actually. Mm. And for good friends and remembering good friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, friends are family, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thanksgiving is huge, of course, in the United States.
Yeah.
Where a lot of families and friends get together for the first time, and they get to do it again at Christmas time. But I think it's about who you're with, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm here sitting in your house with your tree, which looks magnificent.
Thank you.
A lot of New York decorations.
Well, decorations from around the world.
Oh, yes. I've collected many as well.
They're a great souvenir because they're small and you can pack them in the case.
And they're cheap enough to buy, darling.
Well, I don't know.
There is
some
that.
Some of those over there, I tell you what. But every time you put your tree up, you get to go on a bit of a world trip.
Oh, and you think, I remember that decoration and where I bought it. And
absolutely.
Oh, it's
I'll take you for a tour around the tree shortly.
Okay. Not on air afterwards.
Yeah, not on air. We don't want to bore the listener. So how has your year been? You've had a good year.
Been pretty good, actually.
It's certainly ending well.
It is ending well. And, yeah, I have had a good year. I did some cabaret and I've been getting a lot of good feedback from my book still, my memoir. And, yes, and I've suddenly gone into Wicked in Sydney. And that's been fun, actually. It's been really good. I'm doing the Sunday shows and two shows on Sunday. It's a bit of a weird job in that you go in once a week. So it's sort of like being in a company when you're not in a company. So every Saturday I panic that I don't know the show and get out the script and read through it a couple of times. And because I don't really get a rhythm going.
Yes,
you know,
that's
I do two
thing,
shows on a Sunday, but it's every 7 days. You know, it's a long time between drinks.
There's no continuity as such.
No, that's right. Yeah. But I do love playing the role of Morrible. And, yeah, so...
You've played Madame Morrible before, haven't you?
Yes. The last production, which I think is 13 or 14 years ago, I took over from Maid Kirkpatrick, who was doing it. And I did 3 weeks of the Brisbane season and 3 weeks of the Adelaide season. So I did 6 weeks of Morrible. Yeah.
And being played by Robin Nevin.
Now being played by Miss Nevin. That's right. Yeah.
And you go back a long way, don't you?
Oh, Robin and I, Robin. Oh, and I thought, of course, I was doing Mousetrap earlier in the year as well.
Yeah, of course.
And last year, which Robin directed. God, we forgot. How quickly they forget. So, you know, that was a fantastic time. And it was a great... I was saying to Adam Murphy, who's playing...
Dr. Dillamond
in Wicked. I was saying to him last Sunday, it was a special time, that Mousetrap period. And not only because we sold out everywhere and had the sandwich board out on the footpath every night saying, house full, which is always exciting, in every city we played. But it was that group of people. We just got on so well. And it was a very special show. And Robin Nevin, of course, directed that. And now she's playing Madame Morrible in Wicked. So, yeah, I'm doing the Sunday shows for her at the moment. So, yeah.
It was lovely to see the success of Mousetrap also, because it just proved that a well-done commercial play will succeed. People will go.
Absolutely, because, as you know, years ago there were a few... what I would call medium-sized producers who did plays that toured, but we don't seem to have them anymore.
Hmm.
It's either you're doing a huge show or you're doing a not-for-profit show. You know, there's nothing in between. So I'm really happy that Mousetrap did so well, and I believe there are a couple of plays coming back next year that are going to be toured commercially, and I think that's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yeah, classic plays from a bygone era, which we don't really see it, the subsidised theatre companies now, because they're championing new work.
That's right, fair enough too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's right. So there are a lot of plays out there that are commercial. You were asking before that Robin and I go back a long way.
Of course,
and yes,
yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
We've done films together, we've done plays together. She's directed me 3 or 4 times.
Speaking
now.
Of classic plays, I mean, there's that great production that you did with John Hargraves, Wendy Hughes.
Wonderful. And Robin Nevin and myself. Yeah, yeah, Present Laughter. Mm. At the Theatre Royal. It was a Sydney Theatre Company production, directed by Richard Werrett. And yeah, that was wonderful. John Hargraves was fabulous in that. God, he was good.
Yeah.
Andrew Tye was wonderful too. He was in it too. Those were the days, weren't they, when you did a play commercially?
Yeah.
Goodness.
But Madame Morrible, what fun. I mean,
she's a great character. And
Is it fun playing a villain?
Yeah. I wasn't ever interested in the beginning, years and years ago, when they were auditioning for it originally. I didn't go in an audition or anything because I just... You know, my rule was always if I'm in a musical, I want a song of my own and, you know, blah-de-blah. And it's not that kind of part. You know, she's a little bit of singing, but she doesn't have a song. So I wasn't interested. But it's actually a really good part to play.
Yeah.
And it has a very good arc to it, you know, because she starts off and you think, well, maybe she's actually quite nice. She sort of befriends the two girls and then she becomes more evil as the play goes on. So that's great fun to do.
A benign headmistress.
That's it, darling. And beautiful costumes, I have
to say. That's one of the great reasons.
She's a glamour puss. She's such a glamour puss, Madame Morrible.
Well, you've played some glamour pusses in your career also.
I have.
You've worn some terrific costumes.
I have.
Anything goes. I mean, it was frock after frock after frock.
I know. One frock I wore for 10 seconds, I think.
Yeah.
I walked across the stage in it, then changed out of it. Big, sparkly costume, then changed out of it and put another one on.
So what goes on backstage with things like those fast changes and when you have to wear various...
You have a team, darling.
The team. And,
and you just stand there and you have to trust that they just strip you and you lift your foot and they put your foot in another shoe and you just have to trust them. The wig person does your hair and puts your hairpiece in and, oh, God.
Well, there's a discipline for the actor as well that you give in to
You have to
team.
Give in to it, yeah. Yeah. I mean, have a team in this too. In Wicked, we all do. So, team of dressers. And actually, I think there are more people backstage than there are on stage in Wicked.
Right.
It's a huge team of people
yeah.
putting the show on every night.
And it seems to be Morrible has a wig for every frock. as well. How many wigs have you got?
No, I've only got 2 wigs.
2 wigs.
Right. One wig changes. It's got a sort of curly bit in the front, which is then taken off when she becomes a bit horrible
right.
at the end of Act One. And then she keeps that on for the half of Act Two, and then she becomes really horrible and has another more severe wig. Yeah.
What fun, what fun. Well, it's touring around Australia for quite a while, next few years.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, so hopefully we'll get to see more of you.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that'd be good. I mean, I wouldn't mind going in and out of it. You know, that'd be a fun thing to do because you don't have the responsibility of doing it for years and years, darling.
Years.
You come in now and again. That'd be good.
Otherwise, Sydneysiders can catch you...
until February.
Or anyone visiting Sydney until February. So what are you doing for Christmas?
Oh, I don't know.
You haven't...
You're going down to Maryborough.
Yes, in Victoria, yes, to spend time with family for a couple
of
days.
No, we'll just have a quiet Christmas at home in Mossvale in the Southern Highlands, I think. Although I think I'll probably be working Christmas Eve.
Doing a show.
Christmas Eve falls on a Sunday, so it'll be me. Unless they have Christmas Eve off. We haven't heard that yet, I don't know.
You'll get to all sing Christmas carols, which I believe you did when you did Oliver.
Yes. And we did too when in Mousetrap. Right. Christmas Eve, we did a Christmas carol with harmonies and things.
Right.
And it was lovely because... And we did it also, I remember we did it during... when I did A Little Night Music years ago at when I played Desiree at Sydney Theatre Company. And it was lovely because the audience was standing up and leaving after the bows. And then we started singing. And they sort of... It was like a film, you know? If you were seeing a shot of the audience, they all started coming back, wandering back in and sitting down again.
Yeah.
It was really lovely. Yeah, it's nice. Oh, I like doing things like that.
Gorgeous. Well, thanks for being part of the Christmas episode again. You're always a treat. And we look forward to I'll catch you this
Merry
time
Christmas,
next year.
All the listeners to Peter Iyers' podcasts. And there are many, many of them. Well, and let there be many, many more.
I hope so. It's going to the 7th year next year. Can you believe?
I remember walking down the street in your neighbourhood 7 years ago or 8 years ago. And you're saying, what should I call it? Remember? Yeah, and we were saying, oh, your stage just sounds okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Yes, that's good.
And I call it that. And then Reg Livermore releases a memoir called Stages.
Oh, how dare he.
It's obvious really, isn't it? Stages. I mean, why did it take us so long to hatch it?
I know. Anyway. But no, all the best with this podcast. And I love listening to your podcast.
Thank you, darling. And all the best for Christmas and 2024.
You too, and to all your listeners.
And it started again, and I meant every word, and I liked what I said, and I liked what I heard, and I started to think, I could think about starting again. We were laughing again over memories and wine, and the years in between didn't seem a long time. When he smiled, I knew why. In a while, it was starting again. I was standing in the bedroom when it suddenly came clear that at last I don't remember that at one time you were here. All that stuff that used to haunt me like your robe behind the door. For the first time I don't notice that they're not here anymore. And I don't remember summer, I do not remember fall. So it's possible December never happened after all. Did we trim the tree together? I can't get the image through. 'Cause I don't remember Christmas and I don't remember you. Later on, to my astonishment, I did not feel a tug. When I walked into the living room and saw that sheepskin rug, all those pesky little echoes, they're all gone without a trace. It was good to know I could grow unaccustomed to your face. And I don't remember Easter or the rainy day we met. Did we really have some good times? Come on, tell me, I forget. Did I think that you were springtime? It's all vanished in the blue. 'Cause I don't remember talking and I don't remember laughing. And I don't remember wanting, and I don't remember needing. I do not remember April, I do not remember Tuesday. And I don't remember Christmas, and I don't remember you.
I don't remember Christmas, which is sung by the great Geraldine Turner. It's sort of an anti-Christmas carol, I guess, but it mentions Christmas, so...
And sung by her.
Let's play it, exactly.
It's festive enough.
Who could ask for anything
exactly.
More?
Exactly.
Christmas is, it's only a matter of 10 days away, depending on when, dear listener, you were listening to it. This is a perfect episode to listen to, actually, Christmas Eve, while you're wrapping the presents.
Yes.
Perhaps, who knows?
Having a bit of a drink.
So it could be tomorrow. Having fun. It could be in a week. But is there a speciality dish that you like preparing for Christmas, Kate?
Well, one of the things I really love doing was my version of Peach Melba, which is kind of, A, because Melba has always amused and interested and fascinated me, but B, because the way they created it that night in London in the hotel, where she apparently was delivered some fabulous dessert and said, "What's this muck? I just want ice cream and raspberry sauce." And so he did make this thing, which is just white peaches and raspberry coulis and vanilla ice cream. And it is delicious.
Sounds delicious.
It is delicious. And it's good for a summer, hot day, because it's cool and it's sweet and it's kind of, the peaches are so beautiful.
Yeah. What were the circumstances of Oysters Fitzpatrick?
I don't know. I mean, that is a curious thing. Do you know that in New Zealand, because it's very recent in my memory, that my hotel was in the CBD, and like literally, I don't know, a 5-minute walk was one of the most wonderful restaurants called Amano. Mm. And years ago, there used to be a fabulous restaurant in Sydney called the Bayswater Brasserie, and it was like the perfect, wonderful staff, fabulous food, really interesting environment, like perfect place. And this was like that only 2023. So still Italian influence, unbelievable food. But one of the things I had, my mother, while I was there, it was 2 years since my mother died. And it was a Friday. And so I took us both, actually, for a bit of dinner at this restaurant. So I walked there. And I ordered oysters and we had champagne. And the oysters, I'm not joking, were the most... I know Sydney rocks are wonderful. I don't like Pacifics. These oysters were unbelievable. They were huge and they were in that liquid. You know that pearly kind of clear...
Is it a brine or...?
No, it's not. It's like their own...
Milk or...?
Yeah, it's clear... It tastes like you imagine pearls taste like. It's really strange. But it's clear, slightly salty, slightly sweet. It's the liquid they live in. These were so fresh. They were not alive, but they were still in the liquid. And they had little bits you could put on afterwards. And they were the size of, I don't know, imagine if you, like a slice of lemon, you know what I mean? Yeah. Unbelievable. You could taste the salt, you could taste the sea, where they came from. Incredible.
That's good to hear. But I will eat anything, but I've never been able to cope with oysters.
Well,
it's a texture or something, I think.
Well, these were not slimy.
Right.
They were kind of firm and like you could bite them, but, they didn't have to slide down your throat. That... You actually were eating something. Mm. I mean, I know it sounds terrible because you think the poor oyster, but the oyster had gone by this time. I mean, he was no longer there. But it was more like eating a lychee or something than what you think of as an oyster.
Yeah.
Without any slime, any kind of residual kind of, oh my God, what's that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. The best I've ever had. And I've eaten them in France and Italy. I've eaten them in Russia. I've eaten them all over the world. Literally all over the world. In Mexico, in London. And these were the best. New Zealand, Auckland.
Well, I don't think, Christmas in Australia in the summer, you can't go past a prawn cocktail.
You cannot.
With the iceberg lettuce, king prawns, slice of mango, seafood sauce.
Yep.
Delicious.
Absolutely delicious.
In fact, I had one of my favourite meals this year was a lunch at Barrenjoey House on the Northern Beaches. Had a prawn cocktail and it was
wonderful, was it?
Fantastic. Yeah. What are you all doing for Christmas?
Me? I'm not much.
Are you going away anywhere? No, you'll be out to Queensland for
rehearsal.
I'm
going to Queensland on the 12th of January.
Mm.
So, and I've got, and luckily my, the Chew and... my little Francesca the Jew and my son and my daughter-in-law and I and her parents, I think, are having Christmas Day together. And I've got my brother and people before that, and I've got friends after that. So I guess those 3 or 4 days are kind of taken care
of. It's a time of catch-up, isn't it?
It is.
And family and friends and remembering what's good about life.
Yes, and remembering what's important about it.
Yeah.
And what makes you happy?
Well, I'm off to New York City.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be in Sydney, I guess, at someone's house having lunch.
That's going to make me very... No, I'm actually going home to Victoria to have Christmas with my family.
With your
family
mom. I'm glad to hear that.
But no, January I head off to New York with guiding a tour for Academy Travel. So, on a theatre tour, theatre immersion of New York. So we're seeing some Broadway shows. And
oh, my God. Yeah, if I had the money, I'd go with you.
It would be wonderful to have you along. So anyone who's listening who might be joining that tour, I cannot wait to meet
it
you and have a great
fantastic.
10 days.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic.
I think I can't think of anything better for you to be doing in January. I mean, so exciting. And you can rug up, you know, wear
that's what
my
I love about going
dinner.
To the cold in the winter months in New York or London.
Yeah.
You get to wear clothes that you never get to wear in Sydney.
Yeah. And they are wonderful. And they kind of, I mean, I love them. I actually like winter clothing much better than summer clothing. I don't know what to do in the summer. I don't know what to wear or how to deal with it. And seeing I wear black a lot, that's kind of the worst thing you can do. You know what I mean?
It's
kind of
the heat.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas winter, I've got winter absolutely sorted.
Yeah.
I love it.
Well, thank you.
And do you know what you've got to do?
Yes.
You've got to go and see the, you know, the... I haven't seen it for many years, but inside the Metropolitan Museum, they have that floral arrangement.
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
So go and see that for me.
So I will go and see it just for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. And thank you, listener, for being with Stages throughout 2023. It's always great to have your company with us as you're listening to the various episodes that we record. Thank you also to those very regular listeners who interact with me on Facebook and Instagram and all of the socials, you know who you are, and I so appreciate your regular support and enthusiasm. Thank you to the publicists who figure so prominently in arranging some of the guests that we feature on Stages. It's great to have your support also. And to the listener in general, thank you so much for making Stages a weekly part of your listening. And thank you, Kate Fitzpatrick, for, again, another wonderful Christmas episode.
And thank you for inviting me. I've had a wonderful time.
We'll be returning in March in 2024. So whatever you're doing over the summer break and over Christmas, have a most magnificent Christmas and a lovely summer break. And we'll see you in 2024. Thank you for listening.